Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, Lauren of the High Desert here. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's currently Monday, November 2nd, 2015, 11:30 a.m. I know the time just changed, so we're going to be having darker evenings earlier now, which will be exciting. Always a good time, that part of the season. Lauren L. The High Desert is brought to you by Lauren L. Online Marketing. That's my own personal services that I offer, where I assist businesses and individuals in reaching out to their target market, gaining exposure to whatever the product or service is. I do everything from social media outreach to email marketing to online advertising, whatever it is, I can do it. And I'm also a virtual assistant, so if there's tasks that you need to have done online and it can be done in the cloud, then you can contact me and I can help you get the work done. You can go to growwithlaurenl.com to learn more about my services, and I really appreciate it. It's what keeps this broadcast going and the blog as well. Also, Lauren L. of the High Desert is always open to sponsorship, advertising opportunities. I have ample opportunities to promote whatever you do, and I'm happy to connect you with Lauren L. of thehighdesert.com. So if you're interested in putting a logo or a graphic on my website, whatever it is, I am happy to speak with you further about opportunities. You can go to Lauren L. of thehighdesert.com to learn more about that, and I look forward to speaking with you. I'm currently in the process of adding a new section to my website, and it's just at the beginning right now, but I am adding a shopping section to the website. And this idea hit me recently because I was approached by an author who wanted to gain more exposure to her book, and, you know, I'm all for that. She wrote a book about issues in this area, and so I'm really happy to collaborate with her. But you know, I was thinking that so many authors and artists in this area who are looking for exposure and ultimately sales of their products, and that what I'm building here is a great way to gain exposure and to really feature local artists, musicians, authors, services. And so if you're interested to learn more about this section that I'm adding to my website, then please contact me. I'm happy to speak with you and to see how I can be of help to you. Again, you can actually email me directly, laurenlhighdesert@gmail.com. High is spelled H-I, and this should be really exciting. I'm really glad to feature local people on my website. I am going to start with a piece of history coming from a booklet that I published. It was published by the Morongo Basin Historical Society as well as the 29 Palms Historical Society. It is the Morongo Basin 100-Year Project, 1910 to 2010, and you can purchase a copy of this for yourself. And it has all this great tidbit information about the Morongo Basin over the past 100 years up until 2010. And it also has information about what was going on in the United States at that time, which is really fascinating. So at this particular year, it's 1941. The article title is The 29 Palms Weed Show. And here's what the article says. The homestead women of the isolated community of 29 Palms, in order to retain some semblance of civility, formed a women's club that hosted a monthly gathering with a guest speaker. In July 1940, the guest speaker was internationally renowned artist Mildred Bryant Brooks. She drove from her home in Pasadena to deliver a lecture on the art of etching. Etiquette dictated that the podium be decorated with fresh flowers to honor one's guest. There were none available in the desert at that time of the year. The women expressed their apologies to Brooks, who is reputed to have said, "Why do you need fresh flowers when you have so many beautiful weeds?" Two members gathered dry plants from the grounds of the 29 Palms Inn, and Brooks proceeded to form them into interesting arrangements. In 1941, the Weed Show made its debut. This display features artistic arrangements of indigenous desert vegetation as well as found objects, both natural and man-made, a desert rendition of the traditional concept of the floral display. It has been an annual event in 29 Palms ever since. I personally haven't attended the Weed Show, but I have heard of it, and it seems to be a lot of fun, obviously, from this piece of history. Let me check something really quick. Okay, everything seems to be on track. All right, moving on to the events happening in the high desert. I actually haven't heard about many new events happening in the near future that relate to the theme of our website, which is developmental news. And so, yeah, if you know of any news in the area relating to, or events relating to construction, developmental news, things like that, then please contact me and I'm happy to feature it on my calendar. What I do have, though, is on November 4th, taking place at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. This is hosted by the Morongo Basin Historical Society. You can contact Claudia, 760-366-7896 to sign up. Starts at 10 a.m. and you'll get to tour the grounds. You'll get to learn about the history of the location, and it should be really interesting. You also get to learn about the founder of the Institute of Mental Physics, John Dingle. Good information to know that that is such a popular location here. Buck Buckley will be giving a sustainable solar energy talk on November 4th at 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. This is hosted by 350 Joshua Tree. He will be having a presentation, and it is free to attend. It will be taking place at the Beatnik Lounge in Joshua Tree. Should be really interesting. On November 5th, Joshua Basin Water District will be hosting a tour. It's from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and I have heard that this tour is very interesting. You get to learn about the facilities that Joshua Basin Water District is connected to, and you get to learn about the background of how water here, how water is treated, and it's a lot of fun. If you would like to know more information about this, you can go to my website and go to the events section. You'll see a link that says click here, and it'll take you to the page with more information, or you can just contact Joshua Basin Water District directly, and they will give you more information about this field trip. On November 12th through the 15th, there will be the Palm Springs International Health and Fitness Festival. This should be a lot of fun. I'll just brief over really quickly. It's a 4-day adventure in health and fitness that will be both interactive and informative, presented by Marlowe Productions Incorporated. The Palm Springs International Health and Fitness Festival will kick off Thursday evening, downtown Palm Springs, with festival registration and an organic social hour. Festival Friday will offer free activities throughout Palm Springs, including morning yoga, indoor rock climbing, Tesla all-electric car test drives, and more. If you would like more information about this, you can go to my website. I have more detail listed. It is $15 per person per day. And if you would like to go directly to their website, it's pshealthfest.com. There's a lot of things going on there. And okay, the final event that I have that this is a long ways off, and I thought it was sounded really cool. It's also not in the Morongo Basin. It's pretty far. But it's called the National Tiny House Jamboree 2016. It's taking place August 5th, 2016. So I'm just letting you know early. It's August 5th through the 7th, and it's actually going to be taking place at the Western Museum of Mining and Industry in Colorado Springs. And so there is a little bit of description about it. The 2015 Jam surpassed all expectations, receiving 40,000 visitors in just 3 days. 2016 will be even bigger and tinier. The exhibits, educational seminars, keynote speakers, advocacy meetings, food trucks, wine and beer, entertainment, and more. The National Tiny House Jamboree 2016 will be a wonderful celebration of community. Whether you're already living in a tiny house, just beginning to build, or simply curious of what all the buzz is about, the Jam Fam welcomes you to the National Tiny House Jamboree. That should be a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite topics, of learning about alternative living structures, tiny structures, and how to improve the efficiency of structures. So it's pretty far, Colorado Springs, but maybe there can be a carpool ride there to learn more about tiny houses and, to really bring that here to the Morongo Basin. I know that there's a lot of enthusiasts who already live here and are really knowledgeable of alternative living structures. So maybe something like that can happen here. But it sounds like a lot of fun. Your calendar is August 5th. That's all I have for local events. I'll just brief through really quickly some events that I went to as of recent. I did go to the Morongo Basin Conservation Association advisor meeting that took place on November 1st at the Black Rock Campground in Yucca Valley. It was my first time ever going to that campground, but I was told that the campground is within the national park boundaries, but you actually don't have to pay to go there. And it's one of the only locations where you can be on the national park grounds and not have to pay. There's also 49 Palms Oasis, which is also on national park property. So that was really fun to go to. There's actually a structure there that can be used for meetings, which was nice to be at. So at this meeting, again, it was an advisor meeting and it was a general meeting. I was actually invited to speak on the topic of online communication, because the MBCA is looking to expand their outreach through online mediums, email, social media, things like that. So they've taken note of a lot of my efforts using social media and other online mediums, and wanted to hear my take on or recommendations to them. So that was really nice to be invited to speak to them. And, you know, I give a shout out to the MBCA because I just love their newsletters and I love all the information they share. They're just so great at sharing what's happening in the conservation realm here in the Morongo Basin and nearby communities. And they also have members that do extremely well-researched projects about all kinds of subjects. Primarily, what comes to my mind is a research project that was conducted about off-roading in the area. And that was done by an MBCA member. So they always have great information to share. And at this meeting, there was a lot of talk again on the online outreach. There was comment made about bike infrastructure, which is constantly being demanded here in the Morongo Basin. I've been to numerous meetings where bike infrastructure is brought up again and again and again, and I'm totally supportive of it. The MBCA is officially a nonprofit now, so congratulations to them for that. And they also have connections to many other conservation groups in the area. There were representatives there from Campaign for the California Desert, which is really supportive of the three monuments that Dianne Feinstein has proposed. And representatives from Mojave Desert Land Trust was there, as well as other groups. So I encourage everyone to be involved or knowledgeable of the MBCA, keep up with what they are doing. You can go to their website and join their email list, and they send out, again, great information about what's happening in the Morongo Basin. I also attended the Transition Joshua Tree Quarterly Meeting, which also took place November 1st. And this was a quarterly meeting where, let me just kind of sum up really quickly. Transition Joshua Tree is an international-based group. It actually started in the UK, and it's spread across the world. There's transition groups all over the United States. When I lived in the San Fernando Valley, there is actually Transition San Fernando Valley there. And so when I moved out here, I learned about Transition Joshua Tree. So I said, I'm familiar with the group and I like what they do. They do a lot of personal community-based outreach here in the area. They've put on some great events ever since I've been up here that educate people about permaculture, water usage, food, diet, all kinds of issues. So Transition Joshua Tree is an interesting group because they actually comprise of many groups within the entire group, if that makes any sense. So at the quarterly meeting, all these tiny groups met together and there were representatives for each group. So the groups that I recall, there was a water group, which is focused specifically on water. So anyone who's a water enthusiast is welcome to be in the water group and to help the water group do outreach in the community or do studies, whatever it is. There's a group called Open Space, which is focused on hosting events in the area and free events to again, educate the community. There's a permaculture group, which is actually really active. And then there's a group called Heart and Soul, which focuses on just providing a nice atmosphere for people to come and join together and learn about each other, which is really great. The Heart and Soul group has done a lot in the area. If you recall the death cafes that were hosted earlier this year, that was the Heart and Soul group that put them on. And they hosted it at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, at the Yucca Mesa community center, and it was where people came together to discuss the topic of death. And I did attend one. It was really interesting. And they also hosted an OHM gathering earlier this year, well, in July. They are looking into offering laughter yoga sessions to whoever is interested. And they did a preview of laughter yoga at the meeting, which was hilarious. And it says that laughter can offer so many health benefits to us. It's something that's overlooked, but it is something positive. The permaculture group is also really active. They are planning to have people or have trips go to different locations here in the Morongo Basin where you can see gardens, people who have used permaculture methods for gardening. And so that is another thing that should be a lot of fun. And so, again, just to sum up really quickly, this is hosted by Transition Joshua Tree. If you would like to know more about these groups, then go to the Transition Joshua Tree website, which I think is transitionjoshuatree.org or .com. And you can get in contact with them, just shoot them an email, say that, you know, you're interested in a particular group or you would like to know more about what they're doing, and they will point you in the right direction. And so, you can focus on water, hosting events or outreach for the community, permaculture, heart and soul. There's also an enterprise group, which is learning more about community currency. If you've ever heard about communities having their own currency, that's kind of a popular thing that's happening here and there around the U.S. and around the world. There was some interesting information brought up at the Transition Joshua Tree meeting about Joshua Basin Water District. And so I had attended a meeting recently at Joshua Basin Water District a couple weeks ago, and it was reported that the district had met its deduction or the requirement for water use deduction, which was 28%. And so the board of directors were all beaming, saying that they had actually reached 28.5% cut in water usage. And so that was a really great thing. But I'm here at the Transition Joshua Tree meeting, and it's pointed out that actually it hasn't been met, that water usage fluctuates. So there was a time where, yes, we did meet the reduction requirement or cut the use of water to what was required. But it's fluctuated, and now it's gone down to 27%, which is not meeting the reduction rate. And it was also said that the district is fined $10,000 each day it does not meet the requirement. That's a lot of money. Something else that was said was that the Joshua Basin Water District cutting approximately 18% water, but some districts have to cut up to 36%. Because that is one of the issues that is brought up in this area is Joshua Basin Water District and other desert districts cutting as much as other locations where there's more lawns, there's more pools, you know, people are using water for more recreational purposes. So it was noted that there is a difference in how much water is being cut depending on circumstances for different districts. So something to keep in mind is water. The rate that water is cut from the community, it fluctuates depending on what water usage is happening. I will also note a story moving on to the next piece of information. Some of you may have heard that there's a water desalination plant that's in construction in Carlsbad, California. It is the largest desalination plant that is to be completed in the United States. And this plant is called Poseidon. So this has been something I've been keeping up with because it's just really interesting. Obviously, we're in a drought, so there's a lot of questions of where are we going to get water from? Desalination, or basically taking ocean water, taking the salt out to make it potable water. That's an issue that's brought up all the time. It's said all the time. Why are we having water problems? We're right next to an ocean. So desalination is a constant issue that's brought up. And so Poseidon, again, a desalination plant being built in Carlsbad, California, is an interesting project that I have read about here and there in the past. So I just wanted to go over an article that was shared by Buck Buckley on Facebook. And this article was published November 1st, 2015. It's from Yahoo News. The title says, New Plant Test U.S. Appetite for Seawater Desalination. And I just took a few notes on it. I'm going to share it on Lornell of the High Desert Facebook page so you can read more about it. But so here's some details. Poseidon has worked 6 years. Poseidon is actually the company behind the water plant, or the desalination plant. So the plant's called Poseidon, the company behind it. The primary company is Poseidon. Poseidon worked 6 years to win regulatory approvals and survive vigorous legal challenges from environmental groups. The plant will provide 8% of the region's drinking water and raise the monthly bill by $5. Under a 30-year agreement, the regional agency will pay up to $2,367 an acre foot, which is more than double what it will pay next year to import water from the Metropolitan Water District in Southern California. An acre foot supplies water to two typical households a year. There's talk of building another plant in Huntington Beach as well. It was also noted in this article that there is a desalination plant located in Florida, Tampa, Florida, or Tampa Bay, and this plant has been unsuccessful. I've also heard of a plant in Santa Barbara, California, that was built. I don't know the year of it, but it was built because Santa Barbara was cut off from water for a period of time. And the plant, once water became available to Santa Barbara again, the plant was no longer used and it wasn't maintained. So there is talk of starting this plant up again in Santa Barbara, but again, it wasn't maintained. So there has to be an investment in improving the technologies. Poseidon will be using reverse osmosis for so far they said they're ahead of schedule. I don't have the exact date of when it will be opening, but it is relatively soon. So this should be an exciting project to hear about. And again, they are paying almost more than double for an acre foot compared to what they would be paying for imported water. So that's something also interesting to take note of. That's all the news that I have for now, but I do want to end with more of what I discussed with the Morongo Basin Conservation Association. And on the subject of online communication, this has been a really interesting topic for me to observe since I've been in the Morongo Basin, because I have seen different reactions towards social media and towards online communication here. And so I just wanted to take note of it, that there is extreme use happening of social media. Well, everyone is moving towards social media, but obviously the youth are on their phones quite a bit. The younger generations are using social media, email, things like that, frequently for communication. And I've heard different responses towards this primarily negative responses come to my mind of they're on their cell phones, they're wasting their time, they need to be out doing things, be outdoors more often, which I totally agree with. But yes, there does need to be more of a push to get people off their phones and computer. Even for me, that's hard to do. I have been on a computer ever since I was 8 years old. Even before that, I was addicted to video games. I literally had to be pried off of a Super Nintendo to eat Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, you would think a kid would be excited to eat Thanksgiving dinner, but for me, they had to pry me off the video game. I literally wanted to play the video game more than eat dinner with my family. So, you know, I have been on the internet and on the computer practically all my life, and it's always been an interesting place for me because I was always exposed to more than what I was exposed to in my community growing up. I'm able to talk to people all over the world. I'm able to learn so much compared to what the local newspaper can offer. So, you know, I see personally a positive side to the internet, but I can also see, yes, the negatives. It is definitely a double-edged sword. But one of the things that I emphasize, and I emphasize this to the NBCA, is to be conscious of how you think about social media and the internet, how you react towards it, how you use it, and how you talk about it. Because people will take note of this. I think especially younger generations take note that older generations, I would generally say, are not accepting of the new methods of communication. It is pretty frequent that I hear someone in the elderly, I hope to not offend anybody, but you know, I hear elderly refer to social media as a waste of time. They don't want to get involved with it at all. They look down on it. And so this creates a division between generations. It really creates a generational gap, and this is a serious issue. I have actually been observing different organizations, and the organizations, I'll give you one specific organization, an example. VASA Order of America. Okay, I'll say their name. It's a cultural organization about Swedish culture. It's been in the U.S. for 100 years. It's been around for a long time, and it's connected people, brought people together for people to share cultural experiences, for people to learn about Sweden. And an interesting thing about VASA is that it's gradually growing smaller and smaller and smaller, that the members are really aging members now. In an organization, you need to have younger members coming in so that the organization can continue. But in this situation, that's not happening. The organization only consists primarily at this point of aging members who are gradually dying off, and the organization is gradually closing up with smaller groups throughout California. And one of the reasons that I see this is because there's been a lack of acceptance of newer methods of communication. When Facebook is brought up at meetings, the elderly members will scoff and say, I don't have time for that. That's a waste of time. Kids need to get off their cell phones. And this has caused a major problem because the youth are getting most of their information from social media. They like to see pictures. They like to see up-to-date information. And so there hasn't been, again, newer members joining VASA, and I think it's because this lack of interest in, again, newer communication methods. So that's one of the things that I spoke about, which is to please not speak down on social media, even if, you know, you think people should get off it more, but to be more strategic in how you talk about it and to speak of it positively, at least encourage people to use it strategically to educate each other, to share information, and to bring awareness to certain issues. Because social media, when you get down to it, is a very powerful tool for spreading information and bringing people together to become knowledgeable of a particular topic. So that was my primary point. Speak positively about social media, use it strategically, and be sure that you draw it, you make it known that you are using social media strategically. That's my primary point. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's all I have for today. If you have any events happening in the area, feel free to let me know. If there's a particular story that I didn't cover that you feel I should cover, let me know as well. My email is laurenlhighdesert@gmail.com. You can also go to my website, laurenlofthehighdesert.com. I hope everyone had a great Halloween, and I hope you have a great week. Take care.